Hello and welcome back to another episode of Only a Bag, a travel podcast. I'm Darcy Melton, and with me, as always,
is Nathaniel Mellor.
Did I say "is always"? As always. As always, you're here.
I'm always, so always, Nathaniel Mellor.
That's also true.
So far. 28 years and going strong.
Nice.
What are we talking about today? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for being here all the time.
So happy. I'm glad I could lend my expertise to this amazing podcast. I've been a fan for a while now. And I'm happy to be here.
Long time listener.
Long time talker, too. Not necessarily on the podcast. I like to talk a lot.
Mm-hmm. 28 years almost. So we're going to talk about more of what we talked about in the last episode, which is the differences between northern and southern Italy.
But less rambling this time. I think the last one.
Yeah, and maybe a little less history this time.
Yeah, that one featured a lot of me talking about what I found very interesting about the past, which. Well, let's avoid another lecture, yeah?
I mean, I thought it was interesting. I talked too.
Oh, I know. But I think when you look at the, because we can see the.
the amount that you talked versus yes. me. Yeah, typical. I love you.
thank you. So, I love you too. And to get started, not to go straight from the I love you into getting started, but to get started, yeah, I guess we wanted this to be a little more concrete, like for our dear listeners, what you as a tourist to Italy, especially as a first-time tourist, especially as a first-time tourist to southern Italy.
Mm-hmm. It's like actionable information.
Yeah. And I guess for the purposes of this podcast and pretty much the purposes of any time we're going to be talking about southern Italy, both in this podcast and any other podcast episode going forward, probably, we're not talking about Sicily. Mm-hmm. While a lot of this information is definitely going to be pertain to Sicily, I guess it'll still work in Sicily. I think this was one of those things that Sicily is still very much feels like its own country.
Yeah, I mean it's a lot the same, but also a lot different than southern Italy. So while all of this will likely apply to Sicily, there's a lot about Sicily specifically that won't necessarily apply. To southern Italy.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think when we talk about southern Italy specifically, we're basically talking about Campania, Calabria, Basilicata, and Puglia, like the four main regions of the south that are typically called the south. I think Molise is another one that's usually thrown in there in the south, but a lot of people also say that's central Italy, not really southern Italy.
Mm-hmm. Abruzzo, that's like in the middle of the country, but it still feels pretty southern to
me. Well, I think Lazio is also a lot of people consider the south, but that's where Rome is. So it's kind of the dividing line between the north and the south. So most of this, though, is just, and of course, if you don't know anything about Italian regions, fear not. We shall guide you on this adventure. So Campania, famous for Naples, Amalfi Coast, Sorrento. Mm-hmm. Puglia, famous for being Puglia. I think in America we call it Apulia, though. It's spelled with an A at the beginning. I don't know if you pronounce the A or not.
I thought we just said Puglia.
Did we just say Puglia? But then it's a silent A at the beginning for some reason.
Is it spelled with an A at the beginning?
Yeah, it's A-P-U-L-I-A, but in Italy it's P-U-G-L-I-A, Puglia.
I feel like I've always heard Puglia, but I didn't really hear about it until you and I had visited Italy, to be fair.
That's fair. And it's famous for, I guess, basically Bari is in Puglia. There's a couple, I think,
the East Coast. Ostuni is like the Ostuni and Bari. Ostuni. If you think of what Greece looks like in your head, you know, like white buildings with blue tops, that is a lot of what that is a very Instagrammed portion of that coastline.
Well, also, like, what is that town? It's called Albero Bello or something like that. Hmm. And it's almost always like every one of these beautiful towns in Italy thing is Albero Bello is like one of the most. And it's in Puglia. Yeah. I think your aunt actually likes Albero Bello. She saw a picture of it and she sent it to you. And she's like, how far away from this are you? Hmm. Monopoli, Lecce. There's a couple of these like coastal towns that are really popular, mostly in the summer. Basilicata, not very famous worldwide. Matera is possibly the most famous of.
It's got very Teletubby-esque landscapes.
That is definitely one way to think about it, yeah. I think that could...
They should put that on there, like, tourism.
Is that what you think?
Yeah.
Teletubby?
Yeah, the rolling hill.
Well, it's not rolling hills. I'm thinking, but you drive to Matera, and you could easily be somewhere in, like, the Middle East.
Yeah, is that where it's part of Star Wars?
No, that's... It wasn't filmed, Tunisia.
Okay. But does it look like Star Wars-y?
Kind of Star Wars-y, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think there's the colloquialism of spaghetti westerns. That's Western movies. Featuring Italians and filmed in Italy. A lot of those were filmed in Basilicata because it looks a little bit like the American West.
It has a varied landscape.
That's a good point.
Like from one bit to another is completely different.
I mean, there's tons of like lakes and trees, and as you mm-hmm. mentioned, rolling hills, and it's grassy and it's very green and verdant and like misty.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of like the sort of soft hills with the long fluffy grass.
Sure. No. I think that's a lot of it we drove through. Yeah. No, we drove all the way through that, and then we got all of a sudden it ended up these like. Almost, it's all like very caves and craggy cave. And sand. Yeah. So Basilicata is very much an untouched part of, I guess I would say Italy in general. It's quite untouched.
Yeah.
Just comparing, because it's one of the poorest regions, if not the poorest region. And because of that, they've never had a lot of development. Development meaning like infrastructural development as far as like buildings and towns and this and that. So for better or worse, it's actually quite a untouched looking landscape mm-hmm. apart from beautiful. The... I guess fracking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They drill for, I think it's either natural gas. Is that what you frack for?
I don't know. Right.
You drill for oil and frack for natural gas.
Yeah, probably.
I think that's what it is. So there's I mean, maybe they do have oil fields there as well. Not very many, just kind of, it's not even like, you know, to supply all of Italy, but, it supplies Basilicata, I guess. And then Calabria, famous for, well, among many things, I guess. I think a lot of people might have heard of like Tropean onions, or even Tropea is in mm-hmm. Calabria. And that might be it. It's got a very long coastline.
Yeah, some nice beaches there.
Sort of the toe of Italy, if Puglia is the heel of Italy. Mm-hmm. Lovely beaches there, but I can't really think of anything famous.
Reggio Calabria? Is that... Yeah.
Southern Calabria.
Right, it does have Calabria in the name. It
does make
it?
Things easy, yeah.
Okay.
It's also right across the water from Sicily, and it's how mm-hmm. you get to Sicily. But I think Calabria, just in general, is not a very... Like, while some of the food is popular, I think, in the States, it's still just not a very, like, famous region for a lot of things.
Yeah, not like specifically.
Yeah, or at least, I mean, it's famous maybe in Italy. It's not famous outside mm-hmm. of Italy, I should say. So I think that's all four. It's like Puglia, Basilicata, Campania, and Calabria. So those are what we're talking about today. And then again, a lot of this is just sort of actionable information, things that you can kind of write down, store away in your mind somewhere, and then be able to use it when you come to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we going to start off?
Well, we haven't yet said how people can support us, which feels important. So we should let you guys know that you can support us by clicking... Are we going to have affiliate links
sure.
in the description? I hate to be like the give us money. That's not what I mean to say, but...
Buy something for yourself, and can we have part of that money? I think that's like a really nice way of saying what affiliate links are.
Mm-hmm. But you can also follow us wherever you're hearing this podcast. You can like us, leave reviews. That would be amazing. It really, really helps us out. We're doing this because we love this and because we like to share information, but it really helps when we get feedback.
Yeah. And somebody did ask me the other day if this is what we do, like to make money. And I thought that was very, very sweet. And I was like, no, but I'm glad that it looks like that. This does not.
Yet.
No, it'd be amazing if it does. But no, we can put an affiliate link for Trusted House Sitters in the description. It's a house sitting website that we use very often. And now that sort of travel restrictions are lifting, it's going to be something we're going to be using even more and more often going forward.
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to discover places pretty affordably.
Yeah, I mean, rent free, essentially. Mm-hmm. So if you'd like to go house sitting, if you'd like to try out living somewhere else, living abroad, definitely check out our house sitting, Trusted House Sitters link. It is in the description, and then follow us and like us.
Also, listen to our house sitting episode from last season.
Yes, we have 5 episodes on house sitting, if you want to know what it is. We also have some, I was going to say episodes on it, but that's redundant. No, we have articles on it
mm-hmm.
on onlyabag.com. So thank you for letting us shill for Only a Bag.
Thanks.
So where are we starting today?
Okay, so let's talk about coffee first.
Okay, I love coffee. We all love coffee.
If you don't like coffee, that's also fine. No
there
judgment.
There's also tea in this country.
Yeah.
Not much of
tea
it.
Tea and tisana.
Some of it.
So this is not related to what we're going to be talking about, but I just thought of it the other day. Tisana is like herbal tea here.
Yes.
And apparently in America, people use the word tisane.
Yeah, what is that about? I see that on people's, like, houses that are popping up.
Yes, that's where I saw it. And, like, the local natural foods market in the city we were from in the States, I think they had a post or something about, like, come try our locally put together tea sayings.
And is it a brand, like, or is it just is it an actual word?
No, it's just a word people use for herbal tea.
Okay. Because here they use Tisana for herbal
tisana.
Tea.
It's and spelled then the same. For,
huh.
I was like, that's so crazy. They have Tisanas there? And I was like, oh no, I forgot people say Tisane.
Okay.
So just a little fun fact.
Now we're learning. I like that. There's already a good start to the podcast. I'm learning information I haven't learned before.
Yeah, there you go.
Before.
Same word. We just say it like Americans.
Yeah.
Tisane.
But I guess the tea is just still not a very popular drink here.
Not as much as coffee.
Yeah.
No.
But coffee is
very popular. Yes. And it's very different from between the North and the South. So if I'm being biased, the South has much better coffee.
I think also, if I may, like, interrupt already. I'm just going to go right ahead and interrupt. But I think if I may, it's if you're having coffee, it's nice to have something that's punchy and robust and with a kick. And I think it's sort of a... It's wine is a very similar thing. There's a lot of difference between wine in the North and South, but the North is kind of known for Sangiovese and Chianti and things like that. But they're not a very punchy red wine. They're a very watery wine. They're nice. They're genuinely really nice, but they're quite watery. Mm-hmm. And the South, it's just like, it's kind of, I don't know, it's like people call it that smelly feet kind of wine, but it really is just like really punchy, really, really earthy.
It's a much more intense flavor.
Heavy on
the
tannins.
Coffee and the wine is more intense in the South flavor wise. But the cheese in the North is more intense.
That's a good
flavor
point.
Wise.
Yeah,
there's I don't some know in the why. South,
but no, I think by and large, they're much more in that subtle cheese flavors. Sorry, so coffee, robust.
Right. So coffee. One of the biggest things that you will notice if you're here is that coffee in the South is very short, meaning the amount of liquid in your cup is going to be tiny.
Yeah.
It's like a couple of sips. And this is espresso, by the way, that we're talking about.
Yeah, I just want to throw that out there.
It's not, you know, a big cup of American coffee. So that's a short coffee.
And if I may, if for those of you who have been in Italy before and you grew accustomed to liking espresso and you went back to the States and you ordered like ristretto, which it means it's Italian for restricted, but it's usually when they pour a short espresso. I only say this because America, for whatever reason, especially where we're from, all these coffee shops, it's like their standard is a double shot, which is not that common in Italy. You have to ask for the double shot, the doppio, but usually it's a single shot. And I know some people like it restricted. They're like, I want a double shot, but like half of a double shot rather than just saying one shot. I'm not really sure. But the idea is they pull it for less time, so there's less caffeine, but there's supposed to be more of the like... the initial flavors, the sort of aromatics and the oils and this and that. It doesn't get as cooked by the water. There's this whole science behind it. As you can tell, I did not study it. But that's all to say is if you order ristretto in the States, that's probably very similar to what you'll have in Southern Italy. It's very, very short. Almost nobody orders ristretto in the South because it's already quite restricted and you can't really go shorter with a lot of it. I mean, it's like, you would hit on and immediately pull.
Pull the little lever, press the little button for like half the amount of time. So you only have one sip. Yeah, I don't know that that's actually, I think it would just be less coffee at that point. It wouldn't be like actually more restricted and punchy.
Yeah, it couldn't really be anything. So I just wanted to mention that was in case anybody listening had basically like, oh, I like restricted coffee. I want to go to the South and try it. That's probably what you're going to have in Southern Italy. By and large is a very short coffee. So are there any other differences? Sorry, I interrupted again.
Yes. Okay. So in the South, shorter coffee, which means there's less liquid in your cup, but it's not like they just gave you half a coffee. It is just restricted. And in the North, your coffee is going to be longer. There's going to be more liquid in your cup.
And I think if I may, I'm interrupting again, but I think if I may, though, the difference is potentially... I've noticed in the North, and you're watching them do the thing, they let more water go through the...
They do. And you can taste it, too. I mean, it's a different bean as well, often. But the coffee in the North, you can tell it's more watery.
Yeah, it's not... It doesn't... Because almost in the... we're going way too on to this. I know we have everything else to talk about. But I'm just as a thing, it's like as even the Charles Boyle mouthfeel. I don't know. Has anybody else seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Is it just me? But no, but it's like in the South, it's a very thick...
It's like velvety.
Yeah.
It's like, what about the crema on top? Is that a Southern thing or that happens on all espresso?
I think it's supposed to be all espresso. Yeah,
okay.
That's supposed to be like
well-pulled espresso.
Which actually, if I may, now that you brought that up, that's really beautiful. Now that we're talking about this, but for anybody who is interested, who has like is going to rent an Airbnb, and they're like, oh, I want to get some coffee, I want to try some different coffees, I'm going to buy some from the store. You're going to see Cafe Crema a lot in the grocery stores and a lot of these different coffee packaging. It, if I'm not mistaken, it's just the old word for like espresso, because a lot of this espresso put a crema on top of the espresso, which is that little bubbly velvet.
Mm-hmm. It's like a frothier part of the coffee. It's yeah. not cream. It's
very much yeah,
creamy still, coffee, yeah. meaning it's like a frothy thing that and happens.
It just basically was popular. This coffee sort of, I guess, was popularized by the crema sort of thing. So basically people just started advertising their coffee as like, you know, it'll make a creamy coffee. And then that still continued, despite the fact that when you make it with a mocha at home, it does not do that.
Right, because that's not possible in the kind of machine you're using.
You need much yeah. more pressure. Sorry, so.
All right, so coffee in the south, shorter. Coffee in the north, longer. The bean is different. They usually use, okay, so Italy doesn't grow coffee beans.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, somewhere might, but
I mean,
it's,
Sicily
but,
has to grow like
probably,
somewhere at a farm.
But I guess,
somewhere.
I mean, like, usually when you're eating in Italy, they're like, yeah, oh, the yeah, cheese yeah, is from my, yes. my friend Stefano down the street.
Yeah.
The coffee beans are usually not from this country.
I know, yeah. I can't think of anywhere in the south would grow, or anywhere in Italy would grow coffee.
No. So in the south, it's Arabica that they usually?
North
no.
In
the, is north. Arabica. Okay, so in the north, they use Arabica, which I feel like is like super popular in the States. And then they use Robusta.
Robusta, I think.
Robusta in the south. And what is the difference? I can't remember.
My understanding, and anyone who is listening who knows a lot about coffee, please do not cringe inwardly or outwardly as I attempt to explain this. But my understanding is Arabica basically needs a higher elevation and colder temperatures. It's a lot less pest resistant. It's a lot more like the rose of the coffee world versus Robusta. It can be grown at lower temperatures or lower altitude, higher temperatures, much more pest resistant, sunlight resistant, sort of like the dandelion, if you will, of the coffee world.
I was thinking of a succulent.
Or a succulent. And I think, like, if I'm not mistaken, and I thought I read a couple years ago this like article about sustainability in coffee and how, because McDonald's, for instance, is like all about, we use 100% Arabica beans, which is supposed to be really fancy because they are. They're a lot harder to grow. They're more expensive. They're much more of a commodity. I think Starbucks as well uses Arabica because, again, I think these, we're often equating maybe more like the difficulty to grow something with how delicious it is. And to be fair, a lot of people who enjoy coffee at a fine, high level, I think with the same with wine, will basically say the Arabica has a lot more depth to the flavor. There's a lot more like intricacies that does not exist in Robusta. Robusta is a little bit more of like super punchy or robust, a little more earthy, a little bit more bitter, and then not much there. Like there's not much other flavors, but the reason I bring up sustainability is my understanding is you can grow it with less water and in locations that, well, I guess a lot of these high altitude cold locations are going to be quickly disappearing, as even Italy had in the summer. It gets very, very hot at high altitudes now. So you're going to be killing a lot of crops. So the idea is the South is, apparently the South typically uses a Robusta bean rather than.
It's a hardier stock.
Yeah.
Which makes sense for the South.
Would also make sense for the flavor you're talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. It's just that sort of.
It's interesting you talked about flavor, but the Arabica having the more like a depth of flavor, which is interesting to me because, okay, I don't have like a super special palate or anything. I would say I'm very average. But this is not like based on my, I love the South or anything like that of Italy. The coffee in the South is much more flavorful to me. And I wonder if that's partly because it's less watered down.
Sure.
And this is not to you know, be mean to any coffee in the North. It's still lovely. And also, like, Torino, it has insane coffee culture. They make all these different interesting drinks.
I think Lavazza is from Torino, and then Illy is from Trieste. If you've heard of Illy in the States, Illy, I think that's from Trieste, which is just north-ish of Venice. And Lavazza is from Torino, which is obviously in the North as well.
Okay. But the something else that I think affects the flavor is the beans in the South are roasted typically.
That's a good point.
To a darker point.
That's a very good point, yeah.
Which I think has a lovely flavor. I don't know about coffee, but that it's just like richer and toasty and lovely here. And the flavor is more concentrated with less water.
If I may also, I believe, and this might be actually a attribute of the Robusta, which again, if somebody's listening, they might know. I think Robusta has more acid, or at least more acidic on the palate. And that is something I did notice, and I think you notice often too when you have a black coffee, because I know often you have a macchiato or something, or sugar, which is a little bit like to help kind of cut the acid. But there, it's a very acidic coffee in the sense of like that first sip is like, woo, it's got a kick to it. And then by that third sip, you're like, this is amazing. And then, of course, that's the end of the espresso. But the North is a little less, I would say, acidic by and large. And again, that watery thing is not bad, because if you're somebody who does not like a bitter flavor, if you don't like acid, if you don't really like, I guess bitter is a good you know, example, then the North espresso is sort of probably better for you in the sense that it is a little bit more nuanced. It has a little bit more like, oh, this is floral. It's earthy. It's... it's, you know, it has a different flavor. In the South, it's very, as you just mentioned, like, it's just going to be, it's a burned bean smacking you in the face. and that's, I mean, even on the packaging, though, we went to the grocery store to buy new coffee, and it's either super duper toasty roasty, and then almost super duper toasty roasty, but then there's no, like, kind of, we roasted it for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like, you know, it's a 9 on the scale of 1 to 13, or it's an 11, and then that's all they sell. And you're like, okay, well, that's fine. So that's something to keep in mind is, and even though I don't understand, even though like they say the big coffee roasters tells you that the longer you roast the bean, the less caffeine is in it because you get decaffeinated coffee by just burning the beans. It doesn't really seem to affect the quality of caffeine because I am ridiculously hyper
for you.
Anytime I have a coffee.
I haven't noticed a difference, but I'm not that physically susceptible, it seems like, to caffeine. I don't really notice that much of a difference.
You're one of those people who are like, coffee before bed? Oh, don't mind if I do.
I mean, it'll keep me up, but it won't. I won't be buzzing. I'll just be like grumpy that I can't sleep.
That's fair.
So one other thing about coffee, which is not a difference, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the price of coffee is federally protected, specifically when you... Well, okay, it's federally protected. And what that means for you is that when you have it at the bar or the the little walk-up bar. What do you call that? The bar. Okay. Yeah.
The counter, if you will.
There we go. The counter is what I was thinking of. When you have it at the counter, it's going to be about a euro, maybe a little more, like a euro 50. But to sit, people can charge you whatever they want to. And usually, it's minimal. I mean, like, and we live in a tiny town now. They don't charge you to sit. They're just... like whatever, you can do whatever you want here. They barely charge you for the coffee.
77 does charge you to
oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
There's also a fascination with 77 in the South, and it has nothing to do, it's not, I always thought it was weird, but it's like everybody's born in 1977, so they named their place. Really? Yeah. And I'm like,
I thought it was a play on route 66.
That one is, I guess. But there's the other one called the Cafe 77 and across
the
valley.
87.
It's 87.
Yeah. People love numbers, though.
Oh,
you're
my
right.
Gosh, I'm so confused. Okay.
All right. So apparently one of the cafes in town does charge you to sit.
Yeah.
So the sitting fee, they can charge you whatever they want. I think we've probably said before that we both visited Capri and spent like 16 euros on
a cappuccino.
But at the bar, it was just a euro. But they could charge, I mean, they insisted that we sit down. And they totally saw us coming from a mile away.
It was also a little, if I may, because it was a little bit of a bummer. It was in the middle of winter. We went because it was cheap. Obviously, if you're going to go to Capri, come on, you got to go in the winter. and it was, we were trying to stand at the bar because we, you know, had been in Italy for about a month or so. So we're kind of getting into that groove of like, you know, standing at the bar and doing as locals do. And no, and then there's no, you have to sit outside. Come on, you have to sit, you have to sit. And we just thought they're being like in the South, and we'll talk about this in a minute. People are very polite. And they're very more, they're much more like, you have to enjoy the experience. And we kind of just assumed that's what they were doing. And then we got the check and we're like, oh, and this is kind of a time too where we had like, we really were thinking splurging like 4 or 5 euros would be a huge splurge, but let's have this coffee. And then not realizing it was going to be like 16. And this was, I don't know, 2015, I think. So it was also like 10 years ago, 8 years ago. I don't know. So mixed, there's a lot of these things. It's just like, I mean, even Brooklyn wasn't really charging $8 a coffee.
Yeah.
In 2015. I mean, they were close. I mean, they were like, you know, $5 a coffee for sure. But it just felt like one of those completely unreasonable things. But as you mentioned, it's federally... it's mandated, protected, it's established. There's some, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But it's a protectionist sort of thing. It's like Italy's quite big on the certain staples are, and even during COVID, which you'll notice too, we're trying not to mention the word COVID on either the podcast or the website because people have been, they found like their websites and their podcasts and stuff get not turned off, but like
pushed down in like rankings?
No, but like basically like if you mention COVID sometimes like on a website or something like that, the I guess pushed down in rankings. I was thinking like Facebook won't let you post it. Instagram obviously owned by Facebook. So we try not to mention it in case people think we're talking about it. But during COVID, that was one of the very few things that you had to be masked up everywhere. You couldn't be inside anywhere except to have a coffee at the bar because they were like, it's literally part of our national pastime. We can't ask people to suddenly not have a coffee at the bar. So it's a little bit one of those weird things. Where
it's like keeping up the morale. Yeah. Like people will not survive if they cannot have their coffee at the bar.
Yeah.
And I mean, it seemed like by and large, a lot of people were respectful while, okay, it was pretty funny. A lot of the, especially older men, no offense to older men in Italy, could not grasp the idea of keeping their nose inside their mask. Oh, like they would just walk around with a mask like on their chin, between their mouth and their nose, nose firmly outside of the mask, a hole cut in the mask for their nose to go through. I don't know what it was. It didn't compute. But that is to say that at the bars taking the coffee, people were quite respectful of not getting too close to each other. So it seemed like something that people were like, yeah, this is like a privilege that we get to be able to still do this. Like our country kind of in that way cares about us. They were respectful.
Well, and that's the thing. And I think that was why I meant like, and that's just to mention, you mentioned the federally protected. It's just one of those things where what benefits obviously tourists or what benefits locals also benefits tourists. Like you and I got great benefit out of the fact that at the nicest cafes in Florence, in Siena, and we never went to Milan and Torino, but in Milan and Torino, in Venice, you can stand at the bar and have an espresso and you're not going to pay. And I don't know what the federal limit is. You have to check. And I don't know if it's federally mandated for each like
region
or because, I mean, in the South, again, we'll talk about this in a second because we're already 26 minutes into this and we've only covered coffee. My God, we're long-winded. No, but in the South, it's like in Naples, one thing we've noticed is that oftentimes, even when you sit, it's not going to be that much more expensive than standing at the bar. But you can really walk into like the nicest hotel in Naples and have a coffee at the bar and they charge you €1 and you're just like, that's ridiculous. Like, I mean, there's that one famous cafe that I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but they were trying to bring back the suspended coffees, which is basically you buy a coffee for the next person to come essentially and get one. And like,
it's a modern version, like at Starbucks in America, you drive up blind, you pay for the person behind you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very different because you can pay like $16 for one coffee, I feel like, in America at a Starbucks, and you have no idea what the person behind you is going to get. Anyways, but here, it's about €1. So the suspended coffee is paying it forward.
You basically pay €5 and you're like, that's for me, and then four other coffees. Mm-hmm. And so it was this little cafe that sort of repopularized in the sense that they claim to never have quit doing it. I think post-World War II is when they started, or maybe post-World War I. It was after some wars, basically, when very few people could afford coffee. You had essentially the wealthier people who could still afford going out for coffee, so they were paying for less wealthy people. But like the Pope went there when he visited Naples and to have like a real coffee. He's from Argentina, obviously, so he was apparently never had real coffee in his life. I don't know if that's true. I feel like Argentinians have a huge coffee culture.
Maybe, but you're just saying that to be nice.
I think the Napolitanos are telling him he's never had a real coffee in his life. This is a little bit more antagonistic.
That sounds like Napolitano.
Right? They're like, oh, that was coffee? I don't think so. And all that's to say, some of the most world-renowned cafes will still have to charge you at most a very low price. If you sit down, I mean, as you mentioned, it could be a $40 sitting fee, and that is what it is. And it's because you're having coffee at the Ritz-Carlton or whatever's a nice restaurant. I have no idea. The Four Seasons. So is that everything for coffee?
Yeah, I think that's it for coffee.
Okay, let's move on. Now there are 28 minutes.
I think maybe I'm going to go ahead and say that we should probably talk about food differences and then do a second and a third episode for differences.
Well, yeah, we could do that. Let's see how, because food differences might take 2 minutes.
I have a long list, friend.
So maybe a third episode is where it's going to be.
Okay, so differences in food between Southern and Northern Italy. Pasta.
Okay, that's huge.
Huge. And I didn't even know this until recently. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I can do it briefly. I can be short-winded.
Okay, try.
So in one breath, essentially, pasta is, as we know it today, is from the South. Dry pasta is from the South. It's very famous in the South. It comes from mostly famous from a town called Gargano outside of Naples. I cannot remember the spelling and therefore the exact pronunciation. I'm already messing this up. I apologize. But dry pasta, very famous in the South. It's been very famous for, I think, since the 16th or 17th century. In the North, however, they, for a variety of reasons, didn't. They have dry pasta, but fresh pasta seemed to be more popular. Mm-hmm. And that basically influenced a lot of the dishes. The main difference, I would say, is that in the South, it's flour and water, and that's how you make pasta. The big thing about this town that I just mentioned, Gargano, I cannot remember which one it is they basically were like, because of we're like on the coast and the streets are oriented in a certain way, there's this constant breeze, which helped dry out the pasta. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't dry out properly, it gets weird and moldy, I guess. So you have to make sure it's dry, not just, firm. And I guess in the North, they didn't have any coastline. I'm kidding. Obviously, it's a lot of coastline in the North. Not really sure why it didn't really caught on as in the North, but they have egg and they basically it's, flour, water, and egg. Mm-hmm. Or even just sometimes flour, egg, and flour, egg, oil. But in the South, with the sort of the poor kitchen, for whatever reason, the flour and water seem to be the real trick, because even in the States, while I think fresh pasta, growing up, I think fresh pasta is always considered like fancy, and then like dried pasta is like everybody has, Kroger has dried pasta, mm-hmm. or I don't know other brands of, supermarket chains, but Publix, has dried pasta. Everybody has dried pasta, but like no one makes fresh pasta. But then in the South, it's very much like, you will very rarely find, I feel like, fresh pasta because it's not a thing.
They have it in the supermarkets.
Oh yeah, in the
but,
bags.
Sorry, yeah, there's like a couple bags in the supermarket of a fridge section, but there's at least one aisle full of different kinds of dried pastas.
Oh, and that's the thing. Not to mention the North, there might be 5 or 6 or 7 like handmade pasta places in a mm-hmm. town. And in the South, you might have one for like 8 towns because it's just, I mean, even in this valley, there was one for the longest time and now there's a second one. It's just mm-hmm. because, and they really just make ravioli by and large because that's like the only fresh pasta they'll make because they're like, no one wants to make that at home. It's a pain. So we've got to. We'll ask some professionals to make that. So that, I think, would be the biggest food difference is a lot of pasta dishes from the South are based on recipes using dried pasta. And dried pasta itself comes from the South. And then that comes from, I think, Sicily. And then before that, it's, I think, Turkish raiders, actually. Turkish, the when the Turkish people were, I don't know, there's some sort of, the South was constantly invaded by everybody, basically, and everybody brought a different food that was supposed to, like, help mm-hmm. their soldiers sort of subsist in case, Southern Italy was not known for its food. And so everybody brought, like, a different thing to Southern Italy, and then that's, I think, how we have pasta as well.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So speaking of pasta, there's rice. It is also big in dishes, both in the North and the South, but the... In the South, you'll usually have rice in a supli or an arancini. I should say suplo or arancino because that's singular. But it's a little, just delicious, like piece of cheese, usually mozzarella, covered in a little ball of rice yeah. and tomato sauce, and then breadcrumbs, right? Yeah. And then fried.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Arancini are from... Sicily.
And supli are
Roman.
Rome.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're slightly different shapes and slightly different flavors and recipes, but they're quite similar and delicious. Risotto is big in the North, much bigger in the North than it is in the South. But it's interesting to me also because butter and cream are like only used in the North. There are so few recipes in the South where you will find butter and cream. And if you try to make a similar pasta recipe, one has butter or cream and it's made in the North, one doesn't. If you try to make that in the South with some sort of dairy, the Southern Italians would be like, that's disgusting. I'm not going to eat that.
Well, actually, no, that's a good point though, because the, for anyone who's listening, if you're like American, you're like you grew up with maybe American, Italian, American food. If you've had lasagna, mm-hmm. a good way of knowing if you're having North or South, the North would make a bechamel sauce, and the South would use a marinara sauce and then ricotta cheese instead of a bechamel because you're not going to use bechamel, but ricotta is very famous.
A little
bit
of mozzarella in the South in lasagna.
I don't think so. Is there? No, maybe on top.
It was like a little bit on top.
Oh, maybe on top. But definitely not in.
No, not inside. No.
Okay. I was like, I don't know. I don't want to get kicked out of this country by saying there's mozzarella in my
So pasta al forno, lasagna is a good point. So pasta al forno is pasta baked in the oven.
Which we have very famously in the States, and it was baked ziti.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And then even also very famous in the States is macaroni and cheese is a variation of pasta al forno.
Mm-hmm. Lasagna?
I guess that is technically, isn't mm-hmm. it? It's like flat sheets instead of...
So lasagna is from... So in Sicily, they had pasta al forno. It was a lot like what you were describing. It's the tomato sauce pasta and a little bit of cheese in there. Sometimes a little bit of meat. But in the Renaissance, the North added bechamel to the recipe. And that is that was the origins of the way we have lasagna today.
They just can't be happy with anything that was like already perfect.
Yeah, they were like, ugh, we got some French people over here. They've got some cream and butter. I mean, I can't blame them. I'd love myself some cream and butter.
I know, but like imagine, why would you use it? It's a beautiful dish. It's a beautiful dish.
Yeah, they're both lovely.
No, but I was going to mention, as you just mentioned, the rice too, that it isn't really used in a lot of, like Sicily uses it, but I don't think... there are any dishes that are traditional in, when we mentioned earlier the South, we're talking Basilicata, Puglia, Calabria, and Campania. I don't think there's any dishes in the South that use rice. But I also want to say that Sicily grows rice, the North grows rice, but I don't know if the South very much doesn't and never did.
Yeah,
it's like bean dishes, so. Huge in the South. Mm-hmm. I mean, massive. Pasta fagioli, what do you call it in America? It's pasta fazool.
Pasta fazool. Mm-hmm.
Or pasta fazzuoli or pasta fagioli in Italian is pasta and beans. That's massive in the South.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not rice. Like there are almost, I can't think of a single rice dish that's like mm-mm. popular in the South. Not, again, specifically not in Sicily.
Mm-hmm. And people here will make risotto.
Oh yeah, for
but
sure.
But it's not huge, and I don't think its origins are here.
No, but people still, I mean, people like it. No one's gonna be like, ugh, the risotto.
Yeah, definitely.
Polenta, maybe not. Polenta is like a different thing. That's very northern for anybody listening. It's like, it's also though, again, one of those interesting things where, and I wish I knew more about it, but just because we're talking about food very quickly, a lot of what people consider Italian food is very, very recent to the history of the Italian peninsula. Mm-hmm. I say like tomato sauce, like marinara sauce, which I guess we'll talk about in a second, comes mm-hmm. from Naples, apparently originally, mm-hmm. Which is explains why it's so popular in the States. A ton of Italian immigrants in the States, as we talked about in the last episode, are from Campania, the region where Naples is mm-hmm. located, and therefore ate a lot of Napolitano food, which would have been marinara sauce. But, you know, it's tomatoes. That's not, there were no tomatoes before, you know, we started sending off colonists, basically. There's nothing right. like that. There's no corn. There's no potatoes. I mean, eggplants, there's like no nightshades, there's none of that. So this entire, like all these, I feel like all these dishes, and even as we just mentioned pasta, I think, I mean, there's some roots that say it's like 8th century or something like that, but by and large, we're talking 15th, 16th century.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like 1300s, 1400s, like the Italian peninsula cuisine is very different than what it is 300 years later with some stuff that, I mean, I'm saying 300 years later would have been like 1800s, and you're talking about how there's like bechamel sauce and lasagna, and these are these mm-hmm. ancient recipes, and it's like...
they're really not that old.
Yeah, there's a 300-year-old recipe that's nothing. And even now, at a 500-year-old recipe, it's like it pretty much only uses stuff it would, like Italy would not have had a couple hundred years ago, which is one of those reasons there are so many, less so now, but like the 16th, 17th, 18th century had a lot of food writers and cookbook writers who
really
were basically
did.
Trying to preserve... authentic Italian recipes pre a European colonization of the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, you know, what are dishes that we, and a lot of them, unfortunately, but because they're delicious, but like it's beans and greens, basically. It's like, and then some meat. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, that's kind of, I mean, it's not really, it's like a lot of these dishes that we have today are just fish,
a lot of what we of think fish. Of today, I think is not very old, in fact. And is largely, I guess, when we think of Italian food in America, it's largely from the South and, mm-hmm. and immigrants, like you said, from Southern Italy. One of the big ones is, it's not like from the South, but it's from the South. It's from Abruzzo, is spaghetti and meatballs.
Sure.
Is American Italian. It was firmly made in America. It's not an Italian dish. But in Abruzzo, let me look at my notes. They have something called... chitarra alla termana, which is, I mean, it looks a lot like spaghetti and okay. meatballs. It's not something that I've seen where we live, but it is, it's chitarra is a kind of pasta, and it's a lot like spaghetti. They have these little tiny meatballs that are, I don't know, what size would you say? I'm holding up my hand right now.
Ping pong ball size? Maybe smaller than a ping pong ball?
Smaller than that, like a nickel.
Okay, I was going with like an orb shape, but yeah, I could say nickel.
Nickel-sized meatballs. So that was what inspired spaghetti meatballs. Size. Yes.
For anybody who knows what a pinball size is. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, though. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Yeah. Because there's a lot of, we even learned that pasta alla carbonara, which, like, if you've been to Rome, every single restaurant in Rome talks about the pasta alla carbonara. You would think that it's a 1,000-year-old dish.
Can you explain what it is quickly?
Oh, it's pasta with typically just egg yolks, not the egg whites. And then in America, we use bacon. We fry up some bacon, and then we basically you put the pasta in, and then you sort of turn the heat off, and you're supposed to slowly mix in the egg yolks mm-hmm. so it turns creamy.
So like earlier you were saying that the pasta is made with egg, but what you're saying now is that it's pasta.
Dried pasta.
Yeah, dried pasta, then cooked, then you add the egg yolk to make a sauce.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Because the pasta in the north is egg is in the pasta.
Right. Okay. Just so people understand.
No, that's good. That's great. I'm making sure.
This is eggs on the outside, not eggs on the inside.
This is breaking all sorts of rules here in Italy.
You got to break some eggs to make some carbonara, Nathaniel.
Oh, I saw that coming from a mile away and I just couldn't do anything about it. I'm glad we get the one Darcy joke episode.
I know you got to.
It's clear though. We need like three or four, I think. If we can kind of make this a thing. You'd think that she plans these out. These are just off the cuff. Yeah. First take.
I'm so good.
But no, it seems like a very old dish just because, Rome is kind of big on some of their ancient dishes, and cacio e pepe and things like that are like, these are the oldest dishes we have. But prior to 1944.
You were doing like a Sopranos voice. Like. Yeah.
Not a very good one. I was just trying to, not an amazing accent, I'll be honest. No, but prior to 1944, which if any history buffs are out there, that's World War II. I don't know where in World War II that is, but it's somewhere there. It's supposed to be the liberation of Rome. You had American army chefs and Italian chefs apparently collaborating with a mix of freeze-dried eggs, pancetta, and dried pasta, making this dish. And apparently both sides, the Italians and the Romans and the Americans, were like, this is amazing. And so the Romans were immediately like, this is ours. Thank you so much. And the Italians were like, we're going to put bacon in it and call it a day. And to be fair, I got to be honest, as much as I'm always like, oh, the Italian version tastes so much better. I just, the bacon version tastes so much better. The pancetta is nice, but it's quite a gamey flavor. Mm-hmm. And it's not as, I don't know.
It's very fatty.
It's very fatty. It's not, it doesn't have the same kind of really nice flavor that bacon has. It doesn't taste mm-hmm. like bacon is part of the issue. And it's good. But also, like, sometimes when you get the bacon, it's these little crispy bites in it. But the pancetta is rarely cooks up crispy. It always gets a little,
squishy,
a little rubbery. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a different flavor. But for anybody who's, like, familiar with pasta alla carbonara, it basically, while there's a lot of historians that sort of argue, like, no, it actually comes from an older Roman dish, most of it seems to be 1944.
Yeah, there's not much evidence.
Yeah, there's no evidence, really. Yeah. And speaking of one of these famous food writers whose name now, Ada Boni, I think is her name.
Something like that, yeah.
Totally, like, I'm just immediately spaced her name, but I think it's that. She's a prolific food writer, an editor of food magazines in Italy in the, I guess it's like the 20s, 30s, mm-hmm. Maybe even later than that. But she wrote a book on Roman cuisine, the Roman kitchen, and notably it does not have the recipe for carbonara, which they think, I mean, she had every recipe in there, so mm-hmm. sort of like,
and that was just before, so it, that was
14 years before,
right?
Yeah, the first mention of it, which is a recipe that somebody else like sort of wrote down somewhere that were like, nice recipe, dude. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those things where if this food writer did not, if she didn't basically catalog this recipe, then they think that maybe it didn't exist. So that's enough in carbonara, I think. That's a lot.
That's fascinating. Okay, so just thinking about how it's not very old. So 1944 was the pasta alla carbonara. And I don't know if I said, but the spaghetti was invented, or at least written down, spaghetti with meatballs was written down in the U.S. in 1888. Again, it's American, not Italian. But then pizza. Yeah. When was that?
Good question. Queen Margherita.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at me like I know.
16th century? That's a guess.
Oh, God, no.
No?
No. 1800s, I thought, no.
Oh, well, there you go. Everything we're eating is from the 19th century.
Yeah, it's got to be, because it was a, I'm looking around for a phone so I could quickly research this. I'm fairly certain it would, because we remember we went to that restaurant in Naples and it was supposed to be like the birthplace of pizza, and it was like 1870-something.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 60-something.
It's so new.
Because I thought, and we just talked about the whole history episode, I thought it was the like a queen of Italy, not a queen of
Yes.
Naples.
Oh, yes.
Is basically, because also use the Italian colors, not Napolitano, because Italian color being the totally red, right. The white, and the green. So I think it was after unification. And that's all, just, of course, pizza is from Italy. It's also specifically from Naples.
It's from Naples. Oh, and that's what I want to talk about now, is that so much of, I think I said this before, you may have said this before, so much of the Italian food that we think of as Americans is from the South. Pizza from the South. Or pizza is from Naples. Marinara sauce, like you said, from Naples.
Dried pasta. From outside of Naples, but yeah, arguably Naples.
Mm-hmm, Southern Italy. And aglio olio is just, it's just, pasta with olive oil and garlic.
From Naples?
Mm-hmm. There you go. A lot of
eggplant parmesan?
Mm-hmm.
Is that from Naples? Yeah.
Wow.
It's like basically eggplant in the style of the people of Parma. So you use the cheese of Parma and then vegetables sliced in the way the people of Parma would slice them, which I guess is just sliced. But again, actually speaking of new recipes, that's very... I want to say it's like the cook of the Viceroy of Naples or something. I don't know. It's one of those 1850 sort of like some chef somewhere is just like throwing some stuff in an oven and was like, this is delicious. They did a lot of that.
That's where the pizza came from. They were like, oh, we need the colors for the queen. We got to throw this together.
Because that one, I thought, and I could be so wrong, it was some sort of like flatbreads were already kind of popular.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was just sort of, again, well, we have the red, we have the white, like the green for the basil, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of became, I mean, now it probably doesn't recognize at all what it used to, because now it's a very, it's like a chewy, it's really thin, it's beautiful, it's fluffy, it's just like, it's a gorgeous dish. And I imagine at the beginning it was less gorgeous.
Maybe, you don't know, could be exactly the same
could
recipe.
Be exactly the same recipe, hasn't been changed in hundreds of years. But no, I think also like limoncello was from... Limoncello is from either Sorrento or Amalfi, but that area essentially.
Mm-hmm. Caprese pasta. What is it called? Caprese salad. Is that what we call it?
I think all of it's called caprese salad, which is okay. Mozzarella, tomatoes, and basil.
Mm-hmm. Mozzarella is from. Oh, sorry.
What I was saying putting like balsamic vinegar on it. That is not caprese salad.
That is not Italian, you guys.
They would be very sad if you put balsamic, because everyone does that. Every like restaurant is like a little balsamic vinegar drizzle. And it's like, mm-hmm. those are two different places in Italy.
Well, it tastes so... I'm going to sound elitist. It tastes so different in the U.S. because mozzarella, it's like, it has to be eaten. Fresh mozzarella is supposed to be eaten within like a couple days of when it's...
It's usually the day, though.
Yeah. I
mean, it's like, it's made in the morning, it's eaten in the evening.
And it tastes so different when you eat it that way than when you eat it after it's been flown to the U.S. if it was made in Italy, where there are... guidelines on how it's supposed to be made,
but also water buffalo.
Yeah, because water buffalo.
Well, original mozzarella is, mm-hmm. that from water buffalo, not from cows.
It's from water buffalo.
Yeah, so
are water buffalo different than regular buffalo?
I think so.
Yeah, I thought they were just from buffalo. Mozzarella di bufala. They're water buffalo.
They're technically water buffalo. Yeah.
Wow.
I gotta be honest, I don't think those are indigenous to Italy, and I don't know how long they've been in Italy.
They can't be.
Yeah, right.
We've seen
I've never even seen a buffalo walking around and be like, no. Wow, that's just George.
You see a cow in the mountain here, and they're like, yeah, cows, makes sense. But
which those are not indigenous to
not.
Italy.
No. But they seem a little more at ease with their environment. I can't.
The buffalo do not.
They're so out of place here.
No, but so original mozzarella is made in the South. It's made, there's a lot of history around it, but ideally, most people seem to agree it's made in and around Naples from water buffalo milk. And then when and typically it's one of those, speaking of the history of women, a lot of these women immigrants went to New York basically and found out that water buffalo do not exist in New York, and they're like, what do you guys have instead of water buffalo? And they're like, we got cows, and like, give me some cow milk. And they did the exact same process essentially, but it's a different flavor, not like wildly different, but subtly different. Mm-hmm. And the best, I would say, pizza in, while a lot of pizza in Naples is made with regular cow milk mozzarella on top, mm-hmm. It's usually like fior di latte, not actually mozzarella. The only thing they call mozzarella, yeah. is bufala, mozzarella di bufala.
Well, it depends. Sometimes it's mozzarella, sometimes it's mozzarella di bufala, DOP, like,
yeah.
high top shelf stuff, and sometimes it's fior di latte. Yeah, it's usually distinguished on the menu, I think.
Yeah.
But I just to say, like, I don't think either of us mean to be like, if you put balsamic on your caprese salad, you're, you know, crazy. But my point was that it the cheese, the mozzarella cheese that you get in America, if it's Italian, has been flown there, and it's just inevitably not going to taste as good. It's not as fresh. So I understand the drizzle to give it like a little flavor, you know.
Yeah.
But that's
also not done here. I think that, like, I mean, here they really, I mean, if and they rarely make caprese. I mean, Capri is supposed to be famous for it, but like, it was one of those things. It's like Capri is like, we've never made that salad in our lives. It's, I think it's, again, from the like Naples or area around Naples, but it was supposed to be, I don't know, it somehow it got tied into Capri, even though Capri is like, we definitely don't have water buffalo on this rocky outcropping in the middle of the ocean. Capri, by the way, is Italian for goats. Mm-hmm. So Capra and Capri, I guess, is, mm-hmm. is goat and goats. So I can imagine there are some goats that used to live in Capri, but that's to say, it's like the tomatoes are supposed to be sweet, the mozzarella is supposed to be really subtle, the basil is supposed to be nice before. It's all supposed to be nice. I think sometimes I've had in the States and I'm like, it's some sour tomatoes, it's some weird mozzarella that's been sitting around too long, and gorgeous basil, but like, it can't be saved. But no, that's also from, as you mentioned, it's also from the South, as is mozzarella.
Mm-hmm. And so speaking of mozzarella, I think we briefly mentioned it earlier, but Parmesan, and we mentioned it in another episode as well, but Parmesan is from Parma, and also
Modena and
Reggio, what is it? Parmigiano Reggiano, because it's from
Reggio Emilia.
Reggio Emilia.
In Grana Padano as well is, mm-hmm. Is from Reggio, like that area. Or basically, it's Parmesan cheese that didn't make the cut.
Mm-hmm. And it's wildly different than mozzarella, obviously. But I think you can think of like cheeses from, and there are sharp aged cheeses that are from the south. There's so many cheeses in Italy. We should do an episode on it. They just, and they're all different, and it's just crazy. They're all protected and made very specific ways and things like that. But when you think of cheeses that you probably know in America, mozzarella from the south, Parmesan is from the north. Very different. And another thing that's related to cheese that's different is butter, which we mentioned, you know, the north of Italy uses butter and cream. South doesn't use butter. And I love the south of Italy, but their butter is disgusting.
There's a quote I just read in somebody's article about they're making cheese, I think, and no, they're making butter, excuse me. But it was, anyway, this guy is walking around and stumbled on this shepherd's, they were invited to a shepherd's house for lunch, and he sees him boiling a vat of ricotta. And basically he says, yesterday's ricotta is tomorrow's butter, which is probably not entirely accurate, but it tastes 100% accurate, because mm-hmm. every butter we've ever tasted in the South, even
tastes, I mean, like cheese.
Yeah, especially when it's from the South, and people could try to convince us, well, this one's different. I'm like, it isn't.
Well, it's a different process. I mean, I don't find it that hard to believe the, I mean, it might be a little bit, you know, fancied up, but the yesterday's ricotta is tomorrow's butter, because the way that they make their butter is like a tertiary process. It's very much a byproduct of the cheese making industry. And I really don't know enough about butter making, but there is a very different process for making the butter that we know of in the U.S. and like German butter and Irish butter,
French butter.
French butter. But a good example, I think, like you said off mic earlier, is Ireland has great cheddar. They also have great butter, and they taste nothing alike. So I don't think that it's the same. I don't think they're both made during the same process.
Which I feel like that's unfortunate here. But instead, they do use olive oil in the South.
Yes.
We think we mentioned it in the Perugia episode. Like, Umbria does produce some olive oil, but it's like, I think, 3% of Italy's national supply. I think just olives grow much better in the South than they do in the North, because they're much more famous from the South. The olive tree apparently was introduced by the Greeks during the Magna Graecia. I say apparently because there's an argument that the Greeks introduced a lot to Italy. And then the argument coming from, I think mostly from Greek writers at the time, basically saying, you know, we brought over our olive trees and our vines for grapes. But then modern day does this sort of like this genetic testing to see what the genes are similar. And like, mm-hmm. not really. So it's like, I'm not sure what they brought. I think the only ones they had, they brought over, because it doesn't really seem to make sense. But all that being said is the South is obviously very, very famous for its olive oil, but pretty much only consumes olive oil as its only oil. Like, it's, while people still fry stuff in like
peanut oil or sunflower oil.
Yeah, it's still, and because fried food in the South, let's be honest, fried food in the South here is like fried food in the South of America. It's just everybody's frying stuff all the time. It's amazing. I love it. I'm at home here. You walk by lunch hour, everyone's frying something.
Yeah, especially on Sundays.
Yeah, you got fish. You have mostly fish. Why is it just fish?
Squash blossoms.
Squash blossoms. Well, so a lot of the desserts are fried as well.
Mm-hmm. There's a little patate, croquette de patate. It's like a mashed potato
in a ball.
Or
breaded
like,
and fried.
It's amazing.
No, so there's a lot of frying happening, I think, in the South. And I don't know what oil they use. They don't fry in olive oil. It's way too... It's basically burned before you can fry something.
Yeah, the smoking point is too...
Low.
Low. Thank you.
So I'm not sure what the oil... And I'm not sure how new frying things is. I don't know if they used to fry in fat, because a lot of stuff in the South, like for baking, is either olive oil or lard still. Not butter. So it's funny, because, again, there's a lot of pastries that I used to really enjoy. And as a vegetarian, we found out, like, 5 years later... That weird bacony flavor they had that I just assumed was from the oven is actually because they were eating lard the entire time. And I'm like, oh my God.
There's so many similarities between the food and the culture and everything between the Italian South, the American South.
Very much so. Yeah. And I don't know if I've looked for links before, like besides macaroni and cheese, which is huge in the American South, evidenced by my entire childhood. Not that we had a lot of macaroni and cheese, but that was like a classic thing.
We had a lot of macaroni and cheese.
Right? Okay. So I thought you're from the Deep South.
Yeah.
But no, there's not really a lot of links between the two as far as like everybody used lard if you had lard available. It's just, the South very, and Italy, it's very heavy food. It's cooking your greens often with some meat in it as far as like just to flavor it, as they do with like collard greens in the South. Beans are huge in both. So I think there's a lot of these sort of similarities that we see. But a lot of it does come for at least for here, it's olive oil and lard. And I guess in the South it's vegetable oil and lard for a lot of it. There's no real olive oil growing in the South happening in America. No. So that being said is if, and it's more important, I think, if you're living here. If you're visiting here, you probably don't really care if it's if they have butter or milk or lard or oil or anything like that. But
if you're me and you're visiting for like a month or more and you want butter and what you end up eating is like tastes like cheese,
you're gonna be very, very sad.
Yes.
Yeah. But if you're also somebody who like my dad who likes tasting olive oil everywhere he goes, you're gonna really enjoy the South because there's a lot of varieties of olives. There's a lot of variety of olive oil, and it changes everything from when they're picked to when they. Well, actually,
where they grow, the soil they grow in, what kind of tree it is, what strain it is.
There you go. You have to think of a lot more ideas. I was just like, I don't know where they're.
Okay, so we are super fortunate. We should probably wrap this up soon, but I want to say we're super fortunate in that we live in a place where people make their own oil. Families will make their own oil, but that's usually not a big enough production to sell. But we know two owners of Agroturismi, which is like a. Agriturismo is a we talked about it before. It's like a B&B
on a farm.
Also has a restaurant. So one nearby, he has trees that are closer to the coast, and another one in a town just to the north of us. He has trees on his property here in Caggiano is where he is. And the oils taste so different. And I was saying we're lucky enough because we can buy like five liter cans that we buy from each of them. And they really taste so different, even though the trees are not that far away from each other.
That's a good point. And it's like some are more picante, spicy.
Like spicy.
Some are a lot more smooth. Some are more like very, like everyone tells you, for those of you listening, that's a big thing. Like there's a couple of years ago, there's like an olive oil website that's still around called Is It Real Olive Oil? Something like that. I remember. But it hit this moment of fame because everyone found out that like Whole Foods is olive oil is not olive oil. It's flavored. It's like very low percentage of real olive
oil. A lot of the olive oil that you're going to buy in the States is actually vegetable oil. So check Pompeii the ingredients brand. If you can.
Some of the Filippo Berio stuff isn't real. The only one that's real olive oil is like extra virgin. Anything that's like processed or high heat or this and that is just like flavored vegetable oil. Costco, weirdly, ranked very, very highly in the sense of they were using pure olive oil.
Isn't it California, the California brand?
There's a couple of California brands that are supposed to be
But last time we were there, it's like they had one that was
from California.
Yeah, there was,
and the rest was from just around the world, which just not necessarily. To be clear, it's not necessarily that it's bad. That's vegetable oil. Well, I mean, actually, I should say this because for anybody who's curious why I'm talking about it, it's whether or not it's vegetable oil, a lot of when you talk about food, or this is a bigger thing. Imagine I get started in something and I'm just like, anyway, this is huge. I'm going to start talking for 20 minutes. No, but vegetable oil obviously is not great for you in general. It's like one of the worst oils you could be eating. Olive oil is supposed to be really good for you by comparison. However, when you think you're doing the healthy thing and eating olive oil and you find out they've been eating vegetable oil for two or three years.
Especially if you're like me and you eat it like by the spoonful, essentially, like maybe by the bowlful. I just dip bread in it. I grew up not knowing that what I was eating was actually vegetable oil and not good for me, instead of the olive oil that I'm eating now, which is very good for me in many ways.
And I will say, anybody who knows more about this and knows more about, like, we probably know, it's like omega threes and sixes and nines and the triglycerides and medium chains versus short chain. I don't know. Point is, though, and as you mentioned, that's the thing. It's like, so there's an idea that you're paying a lot more for something you think is real olive oil. It's not real olive oil. It's flavored or it's cut really poorly. And there's very, 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 very little protection around it, both in America and other countries. Like, I mean, Italy is every year, it seems like another scandal about how, like, the mafia controls olive oil production. And it's been sending out what they call olive oil, but it's not olive oil at all. It's actually just like vegetable oil. And it's a whole thing. But all that being said, too, is, as I will mention probably just in a second before we wrap this episode up, is if you've heard of the Mediterranean diet, it started in Italy, although it is, I want to say it's a pact of, I say pact, but in the sense of, like, it's called like the 17 countries, seven countries.
I thought it was just seven.
Seven?
Yeah, I think it's pretty small.
And then there's obviously similarly the blue zone diets, which are pretty much very, like, which we might see something in, like, think Okinawa, Japan. Mm-hmm. It's a blue zone. I think there's like part of California. I think there's somewhere in South America, Mediterranean. It's like a couple of these areas that are just, it's the same stuff. It's fish, it's healthy oils, it's very, very, very few aged meats. It's very, very, very few smoked meats, which apparently all aged meats are terrible for you. Who knew? I say that because we live in a country where everybody eats sausage. So what are you going to do? But the term Mediterranean diet, I believe, started because of Ansel Keys, who lived in Pioppi, which is on the coast in the south, in the Campania. It's on the Tolento coast. I don't know. I had a fun accent for coast. And essentially, he's famous for developing K rations, Ansel Keys, for the United States military, World War II. And later moved to Pioppi to retire, and basically his cook, this Italian woman, was cooking stuff for her husband she was not cooking for him. And he's like, no, actually, that looks interesting. I want to try that. And then sort of is basically, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like, theorized that the reason that so many people in this area lived for so long, like Acciaroli, for instance, which is on the same coastline, just a little bit farther, I think it's north of Pioppi, has like a ridiculously high rate of centenarians, people who live to be 100 or older. Mm-hmm. They think it's because of the rosemary that grows in Acciaroli, which is supposed to be about 7 times more potent than normal rosemary.
Mm-hmm. Super cool.
Yeah, which is wild. But that entire, the Cilento area basically is quite well known for having people with very long lives, essentially. Mm-hmm. But not like a, it was almost like without a reason, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, I mean, yeah, they eat healthier, but it's also, they're definitely smokers.
They definitely drink.
They eat red meat and sausage. I mean, historically, you know, 200 years ago, maybe not, but 50 years ago, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the part of it was the diet, and part of it is the exercise. I mean, these people are always walking up hills.
Isn't it now said that it's often because of the cultural, the community system?
There's a huge part of that. Yeah. And apparently it's like the, and I think that was a big one, at least when I was watching or reading something on Okinawa, that was a big thing. It was like basically having like the grandparents and the grandchildren sort of, there's a, like, or the great grandparents and the grandchildren were often spending time together. So it is essentially a way of constantly having a purpose rather than hitting an age where you're retired or something like that and be like, all right, that's it. We have no purpose. We're done with you. But especially in Italy, and we'll talk about this probably another episode, because I think that as Americans, I think we're very much in this idea that, like, at 18, you move out of your house. Mm-hmm. And you go find your own place, and then it's your house. And then when your kids are a certain age, you kick them out of your house. They have to go find their place. And in a lot of the other parts of the world, and I think Italy especially, not especially, but Italy as well, it's a family house.
Right.
It's, you know, this wasn't my parents' house, and it's not my grandparents' house. It's my great-great-great-great-great-grandparents' house. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my great-grandmother still lives with us because, well, she's been living there for 90-something years, 100-something years. So
the multi-family housing is very much still a thing. Yeah,
and it's still a little, I think it's a lot of traditional aspects to it, in the sense of, like, the man will live, you know, I mean, like, that's the whole thing about, like, you don't move out of your house till you're 40 in Italy, but it's like, no, of course not. You're not, like, even then, it's like, where are you going to move out of your house? And, like, unless you need your own place, but it's, you know, you pay property tax, you have to buy a house. It's, you know, a lot of this stuff is already, maybe not the utilities aren't necessarily cheaper, but I'm just thinking, like, a lot of costs we associate with buying a new home or something like that are no longer costs. A lot of people can actually afford to save up here. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's usually like the man stays at home, and then if he gets married, she moves in with that family. Not,
if, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, he doesn't move in with her family, kind of thing. But oftentimes, I guess now, because people want their own space, they're like, let's get out of my house, please. Let's go buy a house together.
But I think there's like a cultural pressure maybe to take care of the older people in your family.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, we definitely have in the U.S., but I think oftentimes it's like, yeah, well, we have to save up enough money to send grandma to a home, you know, not, oh, of course your grandmother's going to move in with us, or we're going to move into her house. It's just
different. That's a big thing. Because also, I think there's that that sort of thing of, and without getting too much into it, because this is not remotely related to food, but it's just, you talk about social culture, is just simply the, I mean, there's so many things that are like babysitting. I don't think we've ever heard somebody just like, you know, grew up doing babysitting for a living. It's just like, yeah, no, of course not. It's like my grandmother always took care of us, or mm-hmm.
Or the aunt, or the aunt, whatever, or niece or nephew, or whoever was around.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, so babysitting in that sense, but it's like you're not going to go to another family's house to babysit because they already have somebody. And you're not
going to get paid for it either. Oh, God, no. It's just like your family duty. Yeah. There's a toddler around, and you're supposed to be watching them.
Exactly. It's like you're the next oldest. You watch them. No, but I think that's a lot of things. Like, so whoever's not working is at home, like, taking care of people. So just this idea that, like, I know that even I talk to friends sometimes as a joke, that like, you know, Italians never move to the house, they move to the house in their 40 or 50. It's like, it's a very true, because though it's not your parents' house you have to move out of, it's mm-hmm. your home,
your ancestral home. Yeah. Yeah,
and even if it's like, and I think it's even those things, like, it's changing now, especially in cities and stuff like that, of course, but so many people who live in cities, like even here where we live, there's homes here that have been here since the 1600s that have stayed in the same family since the 1600s mm-hmm. that they're like, oh, I still have a house and so-and-so. And we visit it once a year in the summer for 2 weeks or whatever it is. But nobody's going to, you know, kick you out. It's not like, I mean, it's almost like your parents can't kick you out of a home that was, you know, sort of bestowed to them, but never, they didn't buy it. They didn't do anything to mm-hmm. it. They just sort of,
and I guess technically they could, but it doesn't really happen.
I think it's all about sort of like that inter-family, and just as far as the food. I mean, it's definitely the food. It's definitely exercise. It's this and that. I think the smoking helps a lot. It seems to help these people. But no, it's also the fact that I think there's constantly, you will never have not have a place to live. So many people at least seem to have, and that's obviously changing too. But like historically, it seems there's like
unless, a family safety net.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. always there's a lot of like socially there's a family safety net, as well as physically being a house, as well as. I mean, even like, you know, I'm thinking like 60, 70 years ago, it's like you can always make money being a day laborer, or like going to work a field somewhere, chop some wood illegally in a forest and sell it to people for firewood. So I think is that everything on the food? Mediterranean diet started in POP, or not started in POP, but popularized because mm-hmm. some guy lived in POP.
Mm-hmm.
Olive oil, butter.
Yep. Is that talked about coffee?
Talked about coffee.
I think next episode we're gonna start talking about people. I think that's a good
segue.
Good, yeah.
And we'll probably do like a back to back. I'll probably just publish them at the same time, so that way anybody who wants to break them up, great. And if you don't want to break them up because you're like, this has been fascinating and I want to keep listening, then you can keep doing that, because I'm gonna publish them back to back. So that being said, thank you for listening to this episode.
Yeah, thanks for listening to us ramble.
Yeah, we really enjoy rambling, and it's nice to do it to somebody else.
Instead of just amongst ourselves.
Yeah, we're like, wow, we've gone around the circle a couple of times. We should probably stop talking.
All right, so we're going to talk to you next time about people. It's Northern Italy versus Southern Italy.
With these broad generalizations.
Yes. Oh, I should say earlier, you made a joke about smoking. I just want to say, we don't think you should start smoking.
There's no way it helps people.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yes, no. Just want to throw that out there.
Smoking. It was a joke because everybody here still smokes, because apparently never made it here. It was the information that smoking is not good for you.
I mean, it definitely did. It's on the packages. They have the horrific images of like what it'll do to you. And there's definitely like,
with the giant thing that says smoking kills, and yet everyone is constantly smoking.
Yeah.
There's like the whole secondhand smoke thing doesn't exist here either. Like the idea that, like, I mean, because people have fires in the field and they're just
burning rubber and everything. Trash.
Yeah. They're like, what is that? A tire. They got some bottles they couldn't, a light bulb. Always aerosol cans.
Hazardous waste.
Some batteries they couldn't be bothered bringing or somewhere.
Light bulbs.
Just burn it. Just burn it. It's fine. What's in it? And then, you know.
That might be a difference in the South. I don't know if they do that in the North.
I don't know.
We can't say for sure if that's a difference. But
then, of course, they use that ash on their fields. And then everyone's like, oh, but the fruits and vegetables of Southern Italy taste so much better. And I'm like, yeah.
They do. Maybe it's a secret.
Maybe it's burning bleach bottles.
All right. let's end here.
Fantastic. We need a producer to be like, cut, just cut.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk to you next time. Yes. About more differences between the North and the South.
Concrete differences that you can write down.
Yep. We're really doing a good job on that.
Doing so well. Thank you so much for listening to this wonderful episode. And we hope to talk to you next time.
Yeah, absolutely.